There's a story about a woman who lived 150 years old, and you know, they drink pure water. The water there, when I went there a few months ago, is the most delicious water I've ever drank from, because it's pristine. It doesn't have any contaminants, and it has all of the minerals that the water produces. They eat completely organic. They breathe pure air, and they're always exercising, going up and down the mountain. They have very tight communities where they have a very vibrant social life. So a lot of meaning also and purpose in their life. Their purpose is to conserve the world.
Hello, my name is Wing, and thank you for listening to A Work in Purpose. Are you wondering what is your life's purpose? Do you see people who are living their purpose and wondering, how did they get there? Me too. That is why I am inviting you to join me on this journey. A Work in Purpose is our podcast for igniting and reaching our purpose together. Be sure to subscribe. Each week, I'll be sharing a podcast episode of me interviewing people from all walks of life who are working towards some kind of purpose, whether it is with their career, volunteering, creativity, spiritual practices, or just how they approach everyday life. We'll dive deep into their stories to uncover what obstacles they had to overcome to reach their purpose today. By hearing their stories, I hope you will learn from their journey and be inspired so you too can become a work in purpose. Like many of us, our guest Carlos felt like he didn't have an obvious purpose. He had a typical office job his entire life, but then 2020 changed everything. COVID had made his job insecure. To make matters worse, the wildfire ravaging across California forced him and his family to evacuate their home. Needless to say, Carlos's life is full of uncertainty. But it was through this uncertainty when Carlos finally gained clarity about his life's purpose. From one serendipitous moment to another, he somehow reconnected with his indigenous roots in Colombia and connected with the isolated indigenous community of 50,000 people who live in the mountain of Colombia called the Ica. Through the teachings of the Icas, Carlos developed a passion about their deep wisdom and the way of living. Now Carlos is on a mission to help conserve and promote the Ica culture and wisdom by creating a mini-series documentary about the Ica, as well as starting a business to introduce Ica's unique coffee to the world. Listen to this episode to hear Carlos's journey of how he finally discovered his purpose, the fascinating story of how he actually ended up connecting with the Icas, and the wisdom they have to share for us living in quote-unquote modern society. Hello, Carlos. Welcome to A Work in Purpose podcast. I'm so excited to have you on.
Hi, Wing. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I want to ask you, you had a pivotal situation that happened in 2020 that led you to your aha moment about your purpose today. Can you share what happened in 2020 and what did you discover to be your purpose as a result?
Sure. So, of course, you know, we all had a pivotal moment in 2020 when the world came to a halt. But with that, besides the pandemic that we were all facing, there was also a lot of economic uncertainty. And one of those economic uncertainties was my job. I was working in a company for 15 years, and that kind of was becoming a little shaky during that time. But also living here in the Santa Cruz Mountains of California during the pandemic, we had a fire. And that fire came close to our house where we had to evacuate. In California, we've always had fires, but the last 3 years, they have been progressively becoming more intense. This year, I live here with my family and my wife and my 10-year-old son. We were called to evacuate our home because the fires were really close to us.
Wow. Yeah. Can't imagine. That fire was like so big last year. So then what happened after that fire happened?
The fire, you know, got me thinking about, well, what is going on with our planet? What is going on with climate change, our environment, really humanity? What are we, you know, who are we? What are we doing to ourselves? And are we on the right track? Living in the Bay Area, you know, you always kind of think that all solutions are technological. And it kind of started to think or seem like, well, maybe, you know, technology is not the solution to everything. Maybe there are other solutions to this problem that we are all facing. And, you know, there is evidence, growing evidence, that shows that not just climate change and environmental degradation are not just the crisis we're facing, but the pandemic is also related to ecosystem depletion. How the more that we destroy the ecosystems, that wildlife becomes more isolated, does not have a home, and has to live closer to humans, since that's how viruses kind of jump from other species to humans. And, you know, many scientists believe that's the case with COVID. So thinking that, you know what, maybe technology and information systems and science in itself are maybe not the whole solution to this problem. They could definitely play a role, and I do believe they play a role, but not be the whole solution to the problem.
That inspired you to find another solution. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. So, being from Colombia myself, I was born and raised in Colombia. I always remember the Native American indigenous communities that live there, and their cosmology is all rooted on living in harmony with nature, protecting nature. For the longest time, they've been telling us that we need to live more attuned with what nature has to tell us, not try to overpower it, control it, but really play a role within the ecosystem. And that kind of rang a bell after many years. I was like, well, maybe they are right after all, you know. So I found a way to connect to some of my indigenous roots, and then started to learn from them how is it that they believe we should be living in this planet.
And what did you learn from them?
So there is so much to learn. The point that I take more poignant from them is that we are nature. So humans, we are mammals, we are part of nature. We should be in nature, understanding nature and listening to nature. They tell us, I've just been there listening, that nature is not to be, or the world has been created in perfect harmony. So it's not to be changed, it's to be understood. We just start to learn to speak that language of nature, listen to it.
And so you've been going there since 2020, and you decided to bring something back to share with the world. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. So on my trips, I decided to document this message that they want to communicate to the world. So I've done a series of micro episodes on a documentary of what it is to be Ica. Ica is the name of the Native American community that lives in this mountain called, and they believe it's the heart of the world. It's the heart of the world, and it's in the center. It's near the equator, and they believe that from there, it kind of beats and sends life to the rest of the planet. So I recorded that documentary, which I've published episodes that we've published about 6 episodes since October, and we got a few more to come. And also, they're published on the website umukecoffee.com, because I've partnered with them to sell their coffee. So they grow coffee in the mountains under the forest canopy in a beautiful way, in harmony with nature. It goes beyond organic. And they use the proceeds from that coffee to repurchase the land that's been colonized and regenerate the ecosystems on those lands that have been destroyed.
Wow, that's awesome. So let's talk more about that in depth. So after the fire, you were having all these questions and thinking about nature and human and our relationship. So how did you first connect back to the Ica?
So I it's funny, because it's almost like serendipity. I had them in the back of my mind. I had asked my wife to, if she could find a connection with them while I was going to work. And she didn't really was able to do so, but there was a friend of mine who called me one day and told me that he needed some help. He wanted to move to California. He needed a place to stay. And so I told him, yeah, you can stay in my house. And when he stayed, when he came to my house to stay here, he said, hey, Carlos, you know what? Actually, because I know that you've been telling me that your work situation is kind of shaky right now, I think you should look into selling coffee. Because I have this friend who sells Colombian coffee. He's an exporter. And I want you to look into it. And he had several coffees from big plantations to traditional farmers, but they also had a Native American offering, an indigenous offering. And that's when I said, this is who I want to connect with. I want to connect with the indigenous folks there. So that was in December. That was a couple months after the fires. And that's how I got in contact with them.
Wow. So how do they grow their coffees differently?
So they grow it in the forest, the agroforestry, in the very, very high altitudes. They follow their rituals. They sing to the coffee. They pick it based on the lunar cycles and guided by dreams. They have no preservative, no pesticides. It's grown inside the forest without depleting the forest. They follow special rules of how much they can cut down to plant coffee. I believe that is no more than 30% of the land that they're using for coffee can be cut down. The rest has to be the millenary or the traditional forest that's been there for thousands of years. So it's very difficult to get up there. I mean, I went there by on a donkey, and just bringing that coffee down, it was hard. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I work with them, because it's so difficult to bring that coffee and when they to grow it the way they grow it in ways that really are not just not harmful to the planet, but they're beneficial to the plant, to the planet, because they know how to nurture the wildlife that lives there. Mm-hmm. And it's all documented in the documentary that I put out. But when they brought their coffee down, you know, the middleman will always try to kind of just not pay them much for it. So they were always kind of like, they were disappointed that they were doing all that work and they couldn't really make any money of it, because they were just always negotiated and put down. You know, my goal is to pay them fair prices, but not just pay them fair prices. One, I want the world to get to know them and understand their message of planetary conservation. And then also help them rebuild their eco-villages. So I've partnered with them and have built two schools. One of them is at the top of the mountain where they have a heirloom seed bank, where they store all of their traditional seeds from thousands of years that only grow in that manner, and teach that knowledge to future generations. That's one we built at the top of the mountain. At the bottom of the mountain, we have a different type of school. That's a school where we are, although they're both built with traditional earthen materials, clay and palm. And if you sleep there, you would have the best night's sleep. There's no air conditioner that can simulate a very naturally breathable clay structure with stone floors and beams and palm ceilings. They're the perfect insulators and regulate the temperature. Beautiful, but not just that, but it's also the oxygen. It's almost like you are outside, but enjoying the benefits of having a more regular temperature. So both buildings are built that way, but the top one is to conserve and promote the indigenous culture. And then the one in the bottom is meant, it's what we call techno-eco-ancestral, because it has elements of technology. It also has solar panels and satellite internet so that the eco students can connect to their school and learn our Western ways of being connected, go to school, high school, university. And we're also trying to promote cultural exchanges for anybody who wants to go there and study botany or ecology, water management system, natural medicine, all of the knowledge that the eco has to offer. So build the cultural exchange.
Wow, that's so interesting. How big is the eco community right now?
So they have 50 eco villages and 50,000 people spread in those 50 eco villages. And the capital is...
Oh, wow. And how are they able to stay, I guess, alive as a culture and maintain itself and maybe even thrive in the future? What were they doing differently?
So their millenary culture, they've been around for thousands of years. When the Europeans came to colonize South America, Colombia, they used to inhabit the whole territory, but they were pushed up to this mountain. So there they lived in isolation. They didn't really mix. We Colombians are, you know, a mix of Europeans and Native American. For the longest time, I have blue eyes, look white, but I have 10% Native Americans. But they were able to stay isolated with their own culture, tradition, cosmology, way of living life up in the mountains. And many of them, you know, they don't have the written tradition. They go more by the oral tradition, meaning that knowledge is passed on through just stories that are told in the special ceremonies or social circles. But people there, some of them lived to be a long life, hundreds of years old. There's a story about a woman who lived 150 years old. And, you know, they drink pure water. The water there, when I went there a few months ago, is the most delicious water I've ever drank from, because it's pristine. It's not, it doesn't have any contaminants. And it has all of the minerals that the water produces. They eat completely organic. They breathe pure air, and they're always exercising, going up and down the mountain. They have very tight communities where they have a very vibrant social life. So a lot of meaning also and purpose in their life. Their purpose is to conserve the world. They have that, and that's why they've come out to share their coffee and their message now, because they believe that we are at a tipping point where they're rooted in preserving the heart of the world, which is the mountains where they live. But because they say that if that mountain dies, the whole world dies. In their cosmology, they were granted that purpose.
Interesting. So you were saying how now that they're getting more access to Western media and seeing what is going on outside of their community and all of like the destruction that's going on. So what made them decide that now they want to be more engaging with the outside world as opposed to, you know, staying isolated so that maybe their young ones won't be tempted to leave the community? Has that been an issue for them?
Yeah, that is an issue. That's why we built the two schools, one at the top to preserve the wisdom that has been, that's lived in that community for thousands of years, so that it doesn't get lost. And also the one at the bottom so that the young Ica are able to access the world without having to leave. Because, yeah, there is a bleeding of the new generation that wants to leave. And then there's also kind of these polarized views of the elder, the wise priests. There's some of them that don't want to interact with the Western or the mainstream world because it's too much. But there are others, the ones that I work with are in the middle. So I'm kind of trying to integrate how to conserve their way of life, but at the same time understand that they need to, we're part of one planet and one humanity. So we're working on that, and that's the objective of the educational facilities.
Interesting. So when you went to their community, so it sounds like there are some people who were like looking at you suspiciously, like, what's this deal, right?
You know, they're very friendly, actually. They're super friendly. They're amazing. They're one of the most beautiful human beings I've ever met, open-hearted. So I wouldn't say they were looking at me. But yeah, I guess so at first, you know, but they're really quick to open up. At first, they're like, who's this guy? But once you show them, you know, intention, they really open up and they're like, oh, this is a great opportunity. But there are other people who, you know, may go there with other intentions. So there are some people who do want to exploit the resources in the mountain, and they're a little scared about that. Mining companies, drug dealers. So that is a concern. But you know, I think they're very good humanists. They're amazing psychologists, really. I did several meditations with them, I was in awe to learn how deep their knowledge of human psychology is. They give these guided meditations and they understand, you know, the human subconscious, our shadows, very, very well. I mean, it's very, very, very deep mythological wisdom. They understand how, I mean, they really tell us, hey, look, you know, the reason why we can't live in harmony with nature is because we're messed up psychologically. So in order to heal the planet, you really need to heal yourself up. And they have a lot of techniques of how to, you know, get in touch with your inner self, get in touch with nature, get in touch with who you truly are. And they know that in their spirituality or in their mythology, they know that we all have a dark side and a light and a bright side, and we need to keep them in balance. And to them, you know, we were talking earlier about, I don't know if the solutions are going to be technological. Yeah, we're going to create this machine that's going to suck up the CO2 emissions, or we're going to create this app or this artificial intelligence algorithm that is going to fix the environment. Because what really needs to be fixed is the human psyche, or maybe not fixed, but it needs to be more grounded or centered. And they have in their beliefs, well, the way that they kind of evaluate the where you are is by trying to center yourself in the four corners. So they have four corners. One corner is, one axis is the male, female, and the other axis is the positive and the negative, or you could call it light or darkness. But we all have it as humans, and we have to, one, accept it, you know. We're not just like, well, I'm a man, I'm Carlos, you know, I'm just very masculine. I also have a feminine side. And also, I could romanticize myself in saying that I'm like, you know, this very light, pure light of being, but it's not true. I also have my shadow and my darkness. So knowing all of that, you can kind of center yourself and be able and to observe that nature has that. Nature has all those four axes, and you can understand it and then live more in peace with it.
Mm. So how did you figure out where you land on the axis?
So they have guided meditations. They have sacred sites. So there are, you know, all of nature is sacred, but within the natural landscape, there are some places where they have this concentration energy. They're really special, and they take you there, and they kind of give you a guided meditation. They tell you a story, a mythological story, and you kind of go through it. For example, in one of them, they took me to a place where the river comes and meets the ocean, and they said a story about a man who had an axe, who made a living out of that axe, and then the axe, he dropped it and fell in the ocean. So a supreme being, a god, told him, well, you know, he was very sad, and he told him, do you want your axe back? And then he said, yes. He said, no, I'm not going to give you your axe. I'm going to give you a golden axe. And then he looked at the axe and he said, no, but this axe is not my axe. The other axe was the axe that gave me my livelihood. And he said, but this is better. This is golden. And he said, no, I want my axe. So then the god gave him another axe, which is a diamond axe. And he gave him several axes, and each one was better than the other. But I don't remember where, I'm going to give you your axe plus all the other axes as a gift. And when somebody else found that out, they told them, well, they realized, oh, they threw their axe in the ocean. Like, oh, I'm going to throw my axe in the ocean just so that the god comes back. And then the god came back and gave him his axe. And he's like, well, no, why don't you give me the, I want the gold axe. And then he threw it again. And he just said, well, I don't, you know, if you don't want your axe, then, I mean, I already gave you your axe and you don't want it. So you better take care of your axe. I'm not going to give it back to you. So there was a lesson out of that story. So that's an example of a kind of, some of them are guided meditation. In this case, I told you the stories of a legend or a myth that they tell you at a different sacred spot. But that's kind of how they keep on guiding you to. And, you know, when you were asking me, well, how do you get yourself balanced? And I was saying that there are this special centers, sacred places in nature that the Ika take you. All of nature is sacred to them, but there are some places that have really dense energetic epicenters where they go there and they give guided meditations for us to reconnect to us, to ourselves, and to nature. And in some of them, they give you like mythological stories. In other, they give you mythical exercises, like guided meditations or visualizations. But all are with the aim to restore internal peace within ourselves and live in peace with nature. I was able to go with them on a journey and to several sacred sites and do those exercises with them. And it was a very, very spectacular experience.
Did you consider yourself spiritual before you got to know all of this stuff from the Ika, or did you have to go through a spiritual journey yourself going through this?
No, I mean, I do consider myself always as being spiritual. You know, I think your podcast is about finding purpose. And another way to frame finding purpose is getting to know, you know, you could either find your purpose or you could get to know yourself, mm-hmm. which I think is maybe another way to rephrase the same question. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of, for the longest time, I've been in that journey to get to know myself. I think it doesn't stop, never stops. It just, you keep on learning more about who you are. And then now I'm in this phase where I've been a student of the Ika, and they've been kind of taking me to this path of understanding that I am nature. It's a new part of myself that I'm learning who I am. I am the great force of nature. You are the great. We are all the great force of nature.
Mm. So what was it about the Ika that made you want to work with them, this community in particular? Did you have like a connection with them in your ancestry?
I do have a connection too. So they are the descendants of the Tairona. That was a tribe that was before them, and that was a bigger tribe that lived in the northern coast of Colombia. And I do have ancestry from them. They're the biggest and strongest, more well-known tribe. There's about 50 of them in Colombia, but they're the biggest and strongest. I have a big presence. I had been to the mountain where they live, and I've seen them several times. But something really a weird story, not weird, I would just say something peculiar happened. It did happen to me that my aunt about 10 years ago came from Colombia, and she gave me one of the hats that the Ika wore. They wear a hat, and the hat resembles it's a white hat woven out of cotton, and it resembles the snowy caps, because they believe that the snow caps are where the gods live and they are the source of life. So when the snow melts, the water comes and it's the provider of life. And if the snow caps disappear, then life disappears. So they want, you know, their purpose is to protect the snow caps. And of course, the biggest threat to snow caps is climate change. But they wear a hat that symbolizes the snow cap, and it's a white hat they wear on their heads. And my aunt brought me one of those hats, and I told them, "What's this?" Like, "No, like an Ika sent it to you." And I was like, "What?" "Yeah, they said that it was for someone in the United States, and I didn't know who to give it to, so I gave it. So I thought of you." And she gave it to me. So I've been carrying this hat for 10 years. I just, you know, put it in my closet, never thought anything about it. Until, well, last year, I just like got in contact with them, and I was like, well, there's the hat, you know? I mean, it was just some sort of interesting serendipitous event.
Yeah, wow. How random. It's like they planted a seed inside of you, thinking that, you know, in the future, he's going to come and we'll partner with him. Very interesting. So I want to take a step back and learn a bit more about who Carlos was before you went on this journey with the Ikas. So where would you say you are at on your journey towards your purpose now? Would you say you found it? Are you working towards it? Or are you living it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm living it. You know, I'm 45 years old. This year I turned 45. My whole life I've always was jealous of my brother. I'm the oldest of four. Mm-hmm. I was jealous of them because my second brother, he's a musician. He always knew he wanted to be a musician. Mm. And then I have another brother who is 7 years younger than I am. He lives here in San Francisco, and he always knew that he loved computers. He's a computer programmer, and he always loved, but I never knew what my purpose was, or like, what did I mean, I kind of had this, like, I liked these little things now and there. And then all of a sudden, last year, it like, boom, everything came together, you know? And it's like, this is what it is. And all of the kind of like the little things that I've been collecting throughout my life, experiences, skills, have been this tool set that I've been putting together, and it's for that. Yeah, it's for this, which is, you know, really what it is to build a platform for the indigenous people of the world. I believe in connecting all of the indigenous people of the world that have been overlooked, so that they can give us a message that maybe it's worth for us in mainstream culture to reconsider and look more carefully into.
Mm, great. What were you two doing before what you were doing now?
So I worked in the pharmaceutical industry for 15 years in doing sales operations and marketing. However, I did get divorced about 5 years ago. And one of the things that came out of that was that I wanted to have a change in my life. And I did partner with one of my childhood friends, and I purchased a land in the Amazon to work with him to regenerate it, to protect it and regenerate it. So I did have that interest or that passion, but I hadn't made the connection to the indigenous communities. You know, it was like, well, I guess after working with my childhood friend, I realized, well, you know, this is great, but I mean, it's like, it's so hard. I mean, I'm a guy like, you know, who's a city dweller and just a technocrat. And like, I can't just go into the one day to the other, to the forest, to the wilderness, and try to pretend that I'm going to be able to thrive in it. And then it all, I guess, came, boom, like, okay, well, the solution is, are these indigenous communities that have lived in it and thrived for thousands of years. And they are willing to show me the way, show us the way.
Mm. So interesting how in 2020, all of those things that happened, like the fire, and sparked this journey for you to get involved in this, helping this indigenous community. But on like a practical matter, what were some of the first few steps you took to actually make this happen? Because like, as you were talking about, you had a lot of hesitation, like, who am I to do this? So what did you do to get over the hump?
You know, I mean, it was just a lot of kind of just, there's an internal voice, like this internal drive that I've never had before. Like, no, this is what I want to do. You know, a lot of people were telling me, well, that doesn't make any sense. No, you know, it's like, don't trust people. They're maybe going to take your money, or this, who are you to kind of meet with the indigenous people? A lot of resistance and obstacles. But I don't know, there's something that is not tangible, that is within, like inside of me. Of course, I think maybe do think that seeing all this world kind of crumble outside, it was like, well, there's nothing to hold on outside, you know? It's like, there's nothing to hold on outside in the sense that, like, well, there's environmental degradation. I mean, we see this kind of authoritarian leadership spreading all over the world. There's kind of like chaos. There's no order. Doesn't seem like there's any order. I mean, there's no real leader. There is a pandemic. There is just nothing to hang on in the tangible world. All I can hang on is to my inner self. And what my inner self is telling me is to do this. So in a way, the kind of the hardships of 2020 helped me go inwards.
Mm, yeah. And then, so once you've discovered that part of you that's on the inside and that voice kept on getting louder, what were some of the first few actions you took to make this into a reality?
So, you know, as like take a leap of faith, and just like, I would, you know, being here, because I made the connection on through Zoom, just like you and I are talking. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, we met with a Native American, Emilio is his name, his Spanish name, his Ica name, but he has a Spanish name. And we would meet every day for quite a while. And he would tell me stories. Then I started bringing other people on board, friends, like, hey, you know, let's have a Zoom educational call and learn about Ica mythology. And then we'd kind of, like, some of them would just, you know, ignore me or think I was dumb. And other people were like, okay, yeah, let's do it. And then he would come, and some people would come in and out. I contacted, I professor, a teacher from my high school days who taught philosophy and religion, and he kind of was like on board with it. And so I would just talk to him a lot. He would tell me about life in the heart of the world, in the Sierra Nevada. And then I told him, okay, well, yeah, you know, I think send me some coffee. And then he said, well, it was the end of the harvest, so there wasn't that much coffee, but he was going to go find somewhere in the mountain. And he found some coffee that was somebody had stashed. And I sent him some money. That was the other thing, you know, take the leap of faith of sending him money. I send him money. I told him that I wanted to. We talked about preserving. That's when we kind of developed the idea of what the vision was for our company, because we started a company with the two of us, and we wanted to preserve the Ica tradition. So he said, well, we know we need to build this school. So I send him, I can't remember the amount, but maybe between $500 and $1,000 to build that community, to build that school. And then he sent me the coffee. We started developing the logo. He came up with the name Umuke. He told me it needs to be called Umuke, and then which means the natural world. Then he said, but before we do this, I need to consult it with the rocks, because they have these rocks that are engraved from their ancestors. So the generations before, they found some knowledge and they engraved it in the rocks. I told you there's no written tradition, it's all oral tradition, but there are some petroglyphs, so symbols that are engraved in rocks, and that's where they get some of their information. So he went and looked into the rock, and he said, yeah, this endeavor is somehow, it has been engraved in the rock. It's going to be a successful endeavor. And then my wife designed the logo, and I gave him the logo, and he said, yeah, I'm going to go consult it with the rocks and the priest. So he went to talk to the high priest, and then the high priest guided him to one of the rocks. He went to the rock and he saw the three triangles pointing to the stars. And he said, yeah, the logo's here. We just need to make some changes. So he made some changes to the logo, added the colors, added the stars, added a platform. They all have meaning. The logo is not just a logo. It has a mythological meaning that he took from the rock and from that high priest. So that's how the partnership developed. And then the day came when I went there, and I thought, you know, he was very excited. He went to go meet me at the airport. So he lives in the high mountains, you know, like probably about 5-6 hours away from where I live, where I grew up. And I went to Colombia, and then him and his brother went there and met me. And from there, they took me onto this wonderful experience that I lived there last year.
Wow, that sounds awesome. So at which point during that whole process did you finally say to yourself, yes, this is my purpose? Was it like the first few Zoom calls that you had set up, or going to Colombia, or seeing the rock?
Since my friend came to stay at my house and told me that he thought I should be selling some coffee, even before I knew that coffee, because he told me that coffee comes from that mountain, and I knew that some of that coffee was grown by indigenous communities. At that moment, I thought, oh, okay, this is where I connect with the indigenous. This is almost like I was, you know, like I knew I was going to connect with them, but I didn't know how. Mm. And then as soon as he told me that he had that connection with the coffee, I was like, oh, okay, this is how. It's like I was waking up from a dream.
Yeah, it sounds like you just needed some sort of catalyst to make that happen. Were you like a big coffee drinker?
I wasn't a big coffee drinker. I mean, I would drink coffee, but it wasn't like, wow. Of course, being Colombian, everybody was like, oh yeah, Colombian coffee, you know? Mm-hmm. One year for Halloween, I dressed up as Juan Valdez, but I wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, I would drink coffee, but I wasn't a fanatic.
And now that you've found this purpose, compared to the Carlos before you found this purpose, how are they different? How do you feel now compared to back then?
Well, you know, every day now is an adventure. I embrace uncertainty. I embrace fear. I embrace my feminine side, my shadow, my dark side. And, you know, I know there's a night now. There's a night, but after night comes the day, and then there comes the night. So I'm a person who now, I wouldn't say that I'm not scared. I'm still afraid, but I can muster the courage or the what it takes to keep on walking on that direction that is like, you know what? Nobody tells me I'm going to go there. I mean, it's just coming from the inside. Like it's setting up my, kind of like my goal, like where I'm headed.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So given how you didn't discover your purpose until just recently in your mid-40s, what kind of advice do you have for people that are trying to figure out their purpose, and what should they do to be more attuned with their true inner self and their sense of inner purpose based on your experience?
So I think that my advice is get to know who you are. Like, who are you? Like, why do you do certain things or react certain ways? And don't be harsh with yourself. Just observe. And I think, okay, well, yeah, you know, maybe I'm shy. Maybe I get nervous when I talk to a certain person or I'm in certain situations. But then in other times, when I'm surrounded by this other type of people, I get very passionate. Or when I'm talking about this subject, just get to know yourself. Listen to yourself. Listen to nature. Because in the world of nature, you also see the reflection of yourself. And in yourself, you see a reflection of nature. So maybe you see the birds chirping or the wind, you know, flowing, and it kind of, that just comes paired with an idea or a feeling. And that could help you uncover who you are. And knowing who you are is knowing what your purpose is. The purpose is to find who you are.
And at what point did you learn about who you are? And did you have like a park nearby that you went to maybe during the lockdown that kind of helped you to discover this, listen to your inner self more?
I did move. Yeah. So I moved to the forest. I live in the forest in the Redwoods, and that helped me a lot. When I got divorced, I moved here and kind of gave me that peace and calm and kind of helped me connect to myself and to nature. So living in nature in the Redwoods has helped me with that. But, you know, there are parts at least in the Bay Area, every city has a park that you can go to, or a beach, mm-hmm. go on a hike. I think those moments are important.
Yeah, totally is. So it sounds like you were going to the park for a few years and learning more about yourself. And then when the coffee opportunity came, it just kind of like clicked, because at that point you kind of knew who you are already, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like you go identifying some patterns, you know, it's like patterns inside of you, like feeling patterns, sensation patterns, thought patterns. And then you also see those patterns in the external world. And it's like, oh, there are waves that come and go. And then all of a sudden you see like, oh yeah, this that's going on in the outer world matches my feelings inside in my inner world, or these thoughts. And then this resonates. This kind of creates like a feedback loop. Like there's this feedback loop between the external world and my internal world. And then, so yeah, it's like, it feels real to me, you know, like this is real. Because right now it's like hard to know what's real and what's not, especially in the age of information we live now. We receive so much information, so much media, but it's not about the external media. It's about the synchronicity between the external world and the internal world, like how they connect to each other. Because you can't deny that there's an external world. You know, you can't just live in your internal world. You can't just try to like, oh yeah, I'm just, you know, gonna focus into you. I'm just gonna sit down and meditate for 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's good. I mean, but you also have to have this feedback loop with the exterior world.
Mm. How do you do that?
So you kind of, you know, like I said, you start, after you get to know yourself, you also start to identify patterns of symbols, mm-hmm. and it could be feelings, patterns of emotions, of thoughts. That those are the internal patterns, right? Like, oh, I'm having this, but I know it's a wave. It's going to come and it's going to go. Then there's this thought. It comes and goes. This feeling, it comes and goes. Likewise, the external world. Yes, external world is, there's night, then there's day, then there's winter, then there's spring, then there's summer. And likewise, there are, you know, friends that come and go or tasks that come and go. But there's also a syncing when the internal world and the external world are kind of synced. There's like this synchronicity and there's this feedback loop. You're getting this feedback loop. Like, oh, wait, you know, these waves are in synchronicity. And then I know that when this happens in the external world and then my internal world are matched, then this feels very real to me. But in order to kind of identify those patterns, you have to have observed yourself, have observed the external world for a little while, right? That's what I talk about, getting to know yourself.
Yeah. And when you go to the Redwood Forest, what sort of techniques did you use to connect with nature on a deeper level? Can you share some of that with us? Because I feel like many of us who, you know, don't go to nature very often have a very superficial relationship to it, right? So what are some ways people can connect better with nature?
Yeah, so I think three, you know, the first one is walking. So when you're walking, you kind of, that speed where it's not in a car, it's not on a bicycle. I mean, you could do it on a bicycle too, but the ideal speed for me is a walking speed. So you're walking and you're kind of seeing that slow change of scenery, right? So it's kind of walking and seeing it. That tempo, the walking tempo kind of gives you that, puts you into that wavelength, that natural wavelength. That's one. The second tip I give is using the senses that you don't traditionally use. I mean, we live in a world where we use a lot of our visual sense, you know, with computers and all of this technological interface, we use visual and audio, but there's also tact that is important. So touch the tree, you know, I mean, touch the leaves, touch the ferns. I mean, if you can touch it, touch the ground. I mean, touch is important because we are so much touch. I mean, our skins is a big sense that is maybe underutilized. And then, of course, smell of nature. Take a deep breath and then just feel your lungs get filled with air and then what that smells like. And then you can start kind of seeing the different shades of light, because the natural light, it's such a big spectrum of when the light filters through the trees, you see all the shades, all the layers, the different trees, one behind the other, which is a lot different than, you know, just the layers that we get from just the pixels on our computer screen. And then the audio, then when you start listening to the birds and the wind, they start talking to you. Then that's when you start knowing that you are integrated and being one with nature. Then you hear the birds talk to you. I mean, they're chirping, but they're giving you a very, and it's not a digital message. It's not a binary message. You know, binary messages are like zeros and ones are very, they're cut. This is a more analog message. So meaning it's like, there is no gap. It's infinite. It's very rich. It's very full. It reminds you of being in the womb when we were babies and we were surrounded by the amniotic fluid. I mean, that's that feeling of being nurtured. There is no space. So when you get into that feeling, oh, there is no space between me and nature, then that's when you realize that you are nature. You're one with
it. Yeah. Wow. That's beautifully said. And was this something you've always known, or was this something you kind of discovered for yourself as you were going to the Redwoods on a regular basis?
I mean, since I was a child, I always loved being in the forest, going to that mountain, the Sierra Nevada of the world. That was my favorite place to be. I've always loved it. But that ability to kind of, you know, immerse yourself, I think we have it as children. It's natural to us, but we lose it as we maybe get incorporated into society, or we have to kind of follow the social norms, and then we live in a more kind of like stop and go type of mentality, more broken in the sense of it's not fluid, right? It's like, okay, yeah, no, you got to do this, not this, yes, this, not. But then you need to relearn that, you know, it's almost like relearning to be a child, relearning to be in nature. And it takes practice, right? Like everything. So just the more you go, the better you get at it, the better you get at being one with nature.
So now I'd like to go to our lightning round, where I'm going to ask you a bunch of short rapid fire questions. You can just answer whatever comes to the top of your mind. So what would you say is the most important lesson you've ever learned?
The most important lesson is to, I think, you know, to be kind to yourself.
And what's a book that changed your life?
The book that changed my life is A Hero with a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell.
Why that one?
To me, Joseph Campbell is the most brilliant mind that the United States has ever produced. He studied comparative mythology. And, you know, Joseph Campbell was born in, I think, 1910s. And so he was part of that great generation that went through. So he went through the First World War, Second World War, and then was part of that generation that grew up with the United States becoming the world hegemony that it became. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking, well, yeah, he kind of followed that curve of ascension that the U.S. followed. But he was just someone who dedicated his life to study mythologies from all around the world, all periods, and he wrote many books, but in this book, he identified an algorithm that he calls the monomyth. And another name for the monomyth is the hero's journey. The hero's journey has been a formula that Hollywood adopted to create many of the great movies that Hollywood has produced, and is based on Joseph Campbell's monomyth. And in the monomyth, it's pretty much a formula on how to find your purpose. So I guess it's very relevant to your show.
Cool. I have to check that out. Thank you. What is one thing you like to do to relax?
I like to, you know, of course, being in nature. I mean, I love going on a walk, going to the beach. I'm from the Caribbean, so going in here, I go. When it's summer, I get in the water here, even though it's freezing. My wife tells me I'm crazy that I do that. It's not the same as going in the water in the Caribbean. I love that. In a more active way, I like to play soccer and then read.
Nice.
Hang out with my son.
Cool. What about, what's one thing you like to do for fun?
I think soccer is the one that I love to do for fun. I have a blast when I play soccer. I'm Caribbean, so I love to dance. I'm a party animal, actually. Nice. I like to drink and dance.
Nice. And what's one thing that makes you enthusiastic?
I think people, you know, I mean, I'm a people's person. I love connecting to people, especially people from different backgrounds. Ethnic backgrounds or just life experiences and even the same experience. I just love people. I love talking to people and hanging out. You know, that's one of the things that hit me hard from the pandemic, not being able to connect to people.
What's one habit you always make sure you do?
One habit I always make sure I do, like, I guess I wash the dishes.
Oh, I mean, like, what's one habit that you do to make sure you have a great day?
Oh, what's one habit I do to make sure I have a great day? I try to have a great night's sleep.
Nice.
I go to bed early. Okay. Yeah.
How early? How early are you talking about?
I mean, I go to bed, like, I would go to bed early, but my son, I put him to bed at 9, and that's when I go to bed at 9.
Okay.
I would go earlier when my son's not here, I go to bed at 8:30.
And what time do you usually wake up then?
You know, it depends. Like, right now in the pandemic, and I've been waking up really late. I mean, I wake up like at 9, 8. No, depends. I gotta take my son to school at seven. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I could wake up anytime from 7 to 10.
Okay.
Depending on the task, but if I didn't have anything to do, I would wake up at 10.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That sounds like a nice time to wake up. What is one habit you are working on, or would like to have?
So I'm working on being more reserved, like keeping secrets. It's tough for me to keep secrets. I'm working on being better at keeping secrets.
Oh, that's an interesting one. Don't hear that every day. So if you're not doing what you are doing today, what would you be doing instead?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know. That's a tough one. I think that I would be, there aren't many choices right now. We're very constrained by where we are right now, but probably like, I mean, I try to do, what would I be doing if I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now? Well, I guess I will be living in Colombia with the indigenous Ica.
Oh, like deepening that even more, basically.
Yeah, nice. Living there with them.
Cool. And how would you describe your ideal life?
My ideal life would be living with the Ica in a techno eco ancestral. So my dream is to build this eco village. Well, the indigenous people before, they used to not have one home. They actually still not have one home. They have different homes throughout the mountain and even going the ocean. So they go up and down. And yeah, my ideal life would be to be indigenous, but also bring some so my dream is to build the techno-eco-ancestral life within the indigenous people, Ica. What does that mean? That means living in those earthen material houses that I told you about, but that are making them more comfortable, bringing a little bit of technology, not a lot, but with the aid, with the leadership of the high priest. So asking them, can we bring this technology? And they accept it. Bringing, and I'm talking about solar panels, maybe, you know, more comfortable beds, and building a house that is made out of adobe, and also bringing artisanal craft from the different tribes, and yeah, living in the forest with the guidance of the indigenous Ica.
Wow, it sounds like you have a very specific vision already. So sounds like you will probably make it happen in a few years, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have a goal. Yeah, so I have a goal and a vision, yes. I want to live there, and I also want to create a reward system that in my opinion, so I've been an incentive compensation professional for my career. So what that means is that I create incentive compensation plans for sales teams. So I tell them what they have to sell and to whom, and if they do that, they get a certain monetary reward. And my belief, this is personal belief to me, to myself, is that we have some problems with how we live our life right now. And it has got to do with how we are incentivized. Our society is not incentivized to protect nature or to conserve nature, to live with nature, to regenerate nature. It's not incentivized to live in community. We live in a period of time where we're incentivized for just individualism and also exploiting nature. So our systems are built that way, but we've hit a rock wall and we haven't been able to muster, you know, the ability to switch that. So I have a vision of creating a reward system that compensates people for having good actions to the plan, regenerating the economy. And yeah, you know, it's a tall order. It requires a lot. I'm in the face of trying to identify people out there that want to be a part of it. They share similar passion. Actually, that's what I'm doing on Bumble. That's how we met, right? I'm trying to find people who want to, you know, have technology skills. The first step would be to build a currency. You know, there's cryptocurrencies out there. They're the latest big thing. But what are they really doing? They're not doing anything, you know? I mean, they're not changing the world. It's more of the same, speculative. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking if we could take one of those currencies and tie them, instead of mining them with just like computers, the person who does a good action to regenerate the planet gets more of that currency.
Oh.
And basically what I'm thinking of is creating that currency, an ancestral currency, and then starting with the Ica, dividing they already have 50 cities, right? I told you 50 eco villages. So taking pictures of satellite pictures and drone pictures of the forest, and then 6 months later, taking another picture and then using machine learning to identify which eco village was able to regenerate the forest more, then that village gets more of that coin.
Wow, sounds very fascinating. Love it. Cool. So how do you define purpose?
I define purpose by knowing yourself.
Okay. And lastly, do you have any requests you would like our listeners to do?
No, I mean, I think that, like I was saying just a few minutes ago, I mean, if you're interested in building that incentive compensation system that rewards human for regenerating the planet, reach out to me, you know, carlos@umukecoffee.com. And yeah, let's build something together. I mean, it can't be done by myself in isolation or you in isolation, but together we can maybe do something.
Cool. Yeah, I'll include your contact information in the show notes. And where can people find Umuke Coffee? Is it available in stores or do you have to just buy it online right now?
So you can buy it online at umukecoffee.com. And we are also at the San Carlos Farmers Market on Sundays from 9 to 1 and at the Portola Valley Farmers Market from 2 to 6. We are pending approval for a couple other markets in the Bay Area, but those are the two ones we're on right now.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Carlos, for speaking with us. It's so fascinating to hear about the ECA community and everything you're doing. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you, Wing. It's been a pleasure.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode with Carlos and got inspired by his story of how he finally discovered his life's purpose. If you are unsure about what your purpose is yet, just keep doing the work to discover and develop yourself. For when the time comes, your purpose will then become crystal clear. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to support this podcast, please subscribe, tell your friends about it, and rate it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Please also follow A Work in Purpose on Instagram and join our group on Facebook. May your present moment, now and forever, be filled with light, love, and joy. Until next time, this is Wing, and you are listening to A Work in Purpose.